Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You'll have to learn the fade on that. Abruptness. It disturbs me. Abruptness. Okay. We've had an interesting week. Of course, God help us, we always have interesting weeks now. It's just a matter of interesting or terrifying or terrifyingly interesting. Let me start with my usual thing. Voting. Last date to register to vote is October 7th. You can go to harrisvotes.com, votetexas.gov. You can also go to vote.org. Any of those will be helpful. And remember that there are a lot of circumstances under which you can vote by mail. You would have to go to one of the voting sites in order to learn how to do that if you have not already. You can vote by mail if you're going to be away from the county on election day and the early voting period, if you're sick or disabled, if you're 65 years of age or older, which means people like me automatically qualify, if you're confined to jail but still eligible to vote, and you must make sure you're registered. Now, the catch here is you must file for a mail ballot every year. So, like, I turned 68 last year. I'm not going to turn 65 next year. It just doesn't, unfortunately, work that way. So even though I am still going to be over 65, I'm still going to have to apply at the beginning of 2020 to get a mail-in ballot. Mail-in ballots have lots of advantages. We can discuss that if somebody wants to. I thought the debates, I mean, you know me, I normally don't do top headline stuff, but I thought the debates were really, really interesting. And I want to talk about them, and I want to hear about you from them. But I'm going to start by saying I found a really interestingly, weirdly satisfying way to watch the debates. Full disclosure, I watch them on MSNBC, so I also watch the MSNBC after show, and I recorded it. I recorded the pre-show also, but that seemed pointless to watch after the actual debate and the after-show analysis, so I just deleted the pre-show. And, you know, very often during the debates, during any debates, going back years, very often I'll watch the after-show to see if anything interesting happened. And generally speaking, you know, they've got 2 hours to show highlights, best lines, worst flubs. And I found something interesting. I mean, because really, everybody on both nights kind of had at least one decent moment, and I don't think anybody did anything catastrophic. And actually, Rachel talked about this the other night, that everybody had at least one good moment and no disasters. Although some people did better than others, and some arcs were better than others. But I found a very interesting way to watch, and I've never done this before. I watched the after show and watched 2 hours of analysis, and then I went back to watch the debates. Now, I have never done that before, but I found it was really, really interesting because it's almost like you have a synopsis of a movie. It doesn't have spoilers necessarily, but it gives you a really good framework of what the movie's about. Maybe it has some spoilers. And I found that having watched the after show gave me a lot more insight and prompted me to pay a lot more attention to the actual debates when I watched them on my DVR later. So this is something I may do in the future. This was really, really interesting. I was listening to Brad on the way in. Great show. Love following him. And he had some interesting comments. He had a couple of individuals. I think he had one guy who'd been in the insurance industry. I'm not sure what the qualifications of the woman were. But they had an interesting discussion. And they made the point that essentially, kind of like they always do, and every 4 years they promise they'll do better, but every 4 years they lie. They just do better in different bad ways. And it's like the media has already appointed a couple of new front runners. So if not paying attention to the polls, if you were to listen to the talking heads, it's like, well, both Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris had these moments that gave them momentum. And, you know, maybe that will put them ahead of. And by the way, I'm not going to be taking calls right away. Whoever's on the line, please stay there and we'll get you in a little bit. But keep your place. I thought it was really interesting, you know, this age thing, it does come up. And some people, you know, when they talk about the age of Bernie and they talk about the age of Biden, and then and people that talk about them because of their age is like, well, that's ageism. Well, you know, in some cases it might be, just like sometimes it's racism and sometimes, you know, a cigar is just a cigar. I'm going to put out my feeling on this. I think, generally speaking, I'll say it in the open, I think Bernie is too old and I think Biden is too old. That being said, I don't dismiss the value of their knowledge. I don't dismiss the value of their experience. I don't dismiss the arc of their lives and their living memory and the contributions that makes. I'm an old guy. I mean, Juan Flores, rather, he once made an interesting comment. I think I had turned like 61 or 62, and he was doing a show before me. And I came in to him as we're doing the exchange, and I said to him, you know, I think I'm too old to call myself middle-aged anymore, because now if I'm middle-aged, that means I'm expecting to live to like 123. And he said, well, you don't have to call yourself old or elderly. Why don't you just use a phrase like middle-old? And I like that. I'm kind of middle-old. I'm 68. I'm middle-old. ARP, you know, sends your first letter when you turn 50, which is horrible. It's the American Association of Retired Persons, and it's like, how many people are retired at 50 unless they're just hopelessly unemployed or seriously disabled? But to get back to the point, while I value everything about age, wisdom, and experience, and I've talked about that many times on my show in terms of myself, I think it's also important to recognize two things. And these are two really important things. Actuarially, these guys are close to their expiration dates. Could they survive 8 years of the presidency, which means that their vice president will literally be the president in waiting, statistically speaking? So that's number one. Number two, I have a stepdaughter whom I love. I admire her enormously. She's incredibly talented, very smart, very knowledgeable. And she's 28. And I have come to understand, I mean, I've known her since she was 11. And I have come to understand that her world, the world she lives in, works in, travels in, the policies she exists under, all of those things, she is on a different world. I have come to understand that I really do not know how to navigate her world. Now, I'm 68. That makes me golden. But it doesn't make me elderly. You know, I'm not like in my 70s or early 80s. But I have, it's been a hard journey for me. I have had to come to accept I could not navigate her world. I don't understand her problems. I don't understand how she accomplishes the things she accomplishes, the mechanisms she uses, the digital access she uses, the social. I mean, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on WordPress. You know, I'm not incompetent at these things, but I also recognize that my iPhone is smarter than I am. I probably use at most a tenth of the things that my phone could be used for, which for me is adequate. But it's not what a 28-year-old does with her phone. So to get, again, back to the main point, which is age and experience and the debates, when Swalwell talked about passing the torch, which Actually, by the way, that comment, which he attributed to Biden, Biden actually took from John F. Kennedy. Nonetheless, he's right. Without dismissing the value of Biden and Bernie and their age and experience and wisdom and vision and living memory, and all of that I place an enormous value on. Don't get me wrong. But whatever they think they know, whatever they think they understand about today, in many areas they probably misapprehend or don't fully understand exactly what the challenges are for people, let's say, 50 and under, 30 and under, 18 and over. I don't think they, or even high school students, I think that they've outgrown knowledge of the everyday world these people inhabit. I don't think that's ageism. I think that's job qualifications. You know, if someone who's 30 years old comes to do a job that's going to require strong knowledge of MS Office, and they really just kind of fumble around with it, and if somebody 60 years old comes in and you test them on Office and they dazzle you, that's the person that you should hire. Now, there may be other things going on, and they may actually have an attitude of, geez, this person is going to retire in 6 years at most. All the training and, their age may raise our corporate medical expense to give them benefits and blah, blah, blah. I mean, all that stuff happens. But all things being equal, if depending on how many applicants you've got, if one of your applicants just blows you away and they happen to be 60 years old, you'd be a fool not to hire that person, because most people now aren't going to keep a job more than about 5 years anyway. They're going to leave. They're going to, whether they retire, die, or just find a new job, they're going to leave. So getting back to Bernie and Biden, I don't think they're in touch. Even if they think they are, I don't think they can be. So now we're talking job qualifications. Are they trying to solve problems that aren't really the problems as they exist? Are they trying to help people in ways that those people understand is not how they need the help? Are they so divorced? I mean, consider the difference between even a 50-year-old candidate and a 75-year-old candidate. There really is such a thing as a generational difference. I mean, my dad, who was born in 1917, when he was little, he remembered riding his dad's milk wagon in the morning. He could tell me about old cars like Model Ts that had wooden slats for floorboards because they didn't have the technology to press a full metal floorboard for a car, and heat was an expensive option. And when they used to drive along, the wind used to blow up in the cracks between the slats up your pants legs, and you would freeze your butt off. So that was his world. You know, my world is remembering I had to go to the library to do research, and I had to pay a quarter per copy at the library, whether the copy was any good or not. So it's like one out of three copies for some reason got screwed up. There was no appeal. I just had to pay the quarter or, the dime before inflation. I remember when hanging up a phone simply involved hanging it up. And when people say, dial me, or I'm dialing a number, and of course they're not dialing the number, it's an obsolete word. It's kind of like dashboard, which used to mean the board that carried the whip. I mean, the world changes. And while wisdom and age and the extent of one's living memory are priceless, don't get me wrong, they don't always relate directly to the problems and challenges of now in a direct way. Does that make sense to you guys? We're going to come back to that in about 5 or 10 minutes. I'm going to start taking calls, and then I'll announce the number, although I think those of you who like to call in already know it. One of the things that Rachel Maddow brought up, and this is a good thing to remember. One of the reasons that Republicans control so many state governments and have so many seats in the Congress is gerrymandering. Do both sides do it? Historically, yes, absolutely. And of course, keep in mind also the parties change. You know, the Republicans once were liberal and the Democrats once were really conservative, Dixiecrat, you know, segregationists in many cases. So the parties change, but they've always done it. The point that Rachel made, though, is, you know, in 2010, when the Republicans swept those elections, largely because of gerrymandering, but not entirely, they then re-gerrymandered those districts to give them incredible disproportionate power. So there was a state that Rachel used as an example, where the way it's apportioned, if the state had voted literally 50-50, 50% Democrats, 50% Republicans, the legislature, the House, the state House, would end up looking like 10 Republican representatives and 3 Democrats, even though the vote split 50-50 along party lines. That's what gerrymandering does. When Obama won in 2008, this enormous victory, really one of the highest presidential election turnouts in American history, in 2010, it's like everyone figured, okay, we're done. We got the black president, technically the mixed race president, but let's go with the black president. We got the black president. And then in 2010, the Republicans took over the state houses. That was a census year. And that's when they really got down to gerrymandering, which brings us to where we are today. 2020 is a census year. Everybody is focused on the presidential election. But what Rachel points out, and which I want to point out as well, it is your local government, particularly your state legislators. The state legislators will determine what your voting districts look like, what your legislative and congressional districts and senatorial districts look like. Don't ignore your local elections. If you're going to be an activist, if you're going to be a financial contributor, it's great to pick your presidential candidate, but also look for your House representative, your state House representative. In a census year, Charles Kuffner, he does a piece called Off the Cuff, and I sort of referenced this last week, and I'm just going to take a little excerpt of that. Starting with a little segment from Texas Tribune. In 2010, Republicans won a swath of state legislatures which allowed them to gerrymander Dems out of state and federal legislatures. It's vital we must not allow that to happen again. Kuffner goes on that, citing from the Texas Tribune, some Democrats are mobilizing in hopes of taking 9 House seats that they need for a majority. And Kuffner mentions some names for some of those districts that are running. Now, I don't know whether I don't think he's doing an endorsement, but he's making a point. And the point is that you really need to pay attention, contribute money, maybe do some shoe leather, phone calls, whatever kind of activism you do. I contribute money. And I will be looking at the local races, the state legislative races, and see if I want to donate some money to them. Because, you know, I donate 5, 10, 25, 50 bucks at a pop. I might do that several times, but my donations are small. And that money means a lot more to a state legislator. So are we going to take a phone call if someone calls in? Yeah, okay. So the phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Are you on the phone with somebody? Because I don't see them on my screen. Okay, I'm not sure what that means. All right, if I see someone pop up, I'll pick up the phone. How's that? Can you pass somebody through? She's got a good heart, but she's in training. So let's be patient. All right. I'll just keep going. In the vein of campaigning, there was an article again in the Texas Tribune. I now make an effort to try to follow that for information that might be interesting for people in Houston and Texas generally. There's a headline that says, "It's like they're frightened to talk to me. Texas campaign workers of color face harassment, discrimination in the field. Many campaign workers of color in the state can recount harrowing experiences of block walking in predominantly white neighborhoods, a situation that could become increasingly common as some of those communities draw more competition." While campaigning for a city council, this is from the article, while campaigning for a city council hopeful earlier this year, Rosh Farisat was assigned to knock on doors in an affluent Dallas neighborhood where most of the residents did not look like him. Farisat had his block walking routine down pat. If there was no one home, he'd just leave a door hanger. But he'd run out that day, and while he was trying to wedge his candidate's business card or campaign card into a door frame, a white woman on the opposite side of the street began shouting at him to get away from that door. As he was trying to explain what he was doing, her husband came outside. Arash had been working on political campaigns in Texas for at least a half a dozen years, and he told a couple he came in peace. But the situation took a turn for the worse after the man brandished a firearm. Too freaking many guns in Texas. And Farisat caught on his cell phone before deciding to call the police. He said that it wasn't the first time he's faced a firearm while going door-to-door. He's also had police call on him several times in the past. So this is, you know, one of those. Now, I think that he was Arabic. So, you know, calling him a person of color, yes, no, maybe, doesn't matter. But basically someone who doesn't look, quote, white, European white. And this is a problem. People, stupid people, ignorant people, Fox News people, they are triggered by people that aren't quite white. And this poses real physical danger. Okay, I think we've got a caller. Can I take line two? Can I take line two? Zach, we have a call.
Hello.
Hey, let me just repeat the number because now we are taking calls. 713-526-5738. Zach, what's up? Are you a first-time caller to this show?
This is Johnny, as in Carson.
Oh, so you're not Zach. Okay. How
Listen,
are you, Johnny?
I think I kind of disagree with you, what you said earlier about the age. I don't agree that all 70-somethings are quite the same. For example, Joe Biden, he's roughly the same age as Bernie, but Bernie gets more than what Biden does. Plus, Bernie's politics are more true to what the majority of the American people hold. His values hold true. So whether or not he knows how to operate a smartphone or not, that's really irrelevant because he's got people around him, advisors, that are younger who know stuff like that. And by the way, he does know how to operate a cell phone.
I know how to operate a cell phone, too. The question is how well. And how deeply, and how many features, and what does he know about having a student loan as opposed to the abstract of student loans? What does he know?
They're picking their mic.
I'm sorry?
He knows what it's like not to have, and that stays with you for your life.
It does.
And
I don't.
He transmits him his message every time he goes out.
And I do not devalue that experience. I don't. But how likely is it he'll live through an 8-year term?
Well, he's going to retire after one term, because if he had won the other term like he was supposed to, this would
be
his second term.
I would argue whether or not he was supposed to win the first one. But if he is a one-term president, that means that he's giving up for the party, for the country, the most valuable asset that a president has, and that's incumbency. So we really don't want. Well, you may disagree, but it's historically a case. So he would be then putting the presidency back in play with all of the debates and all of the primary candidates and risking again losing the White House and maybe the Congress. We want.
There's two reasons why I disagree with you on that.
Okay.
Number one, George Herbert Walker Bush, he didn't lose it for the party, and he was an incumbent. He left because he said, "Read my lips, no new taxes."
Well,
and the bottom line for the American people is, It always will be the bottom line, people's pocketbook. Number two, are you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just breathing. I'm allowed to breathe. Anyway, I can even breathe hard, and the microphone will pick it up. But that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So I already told you that George Herbert Walker Bush is an example. That's one example. That's reason number one. And now I'm forgetting the other reason. So I'm going to have to
leave. You see? Old people. Old people, Johnny. But seriously, you can cherry pick, but historically, the incumbent president, if he runs, wins. It's just that simple.
I remember my second point.
Okay,
here we go. If you have a Bernie Warren ticket, okay, Elizabeth Warren, she's almost at the same level as Bernie in terms of progressive ideas. Why I wouldn't put her as number one right now is because she has to prove herself as far as I'm concerned. But serving as vice president and given several responsibilities and not being a slug like VP, like so many VPs are, she'll be ready come election cycle again to run for the number one spot.
But let me pose a different scenario to you. If let's say it's Bernie, let's say it's Biden, if they only go for one term and then retire, even if whoever is the vice president, even if they're a wonderful vice president, you know what? They're still going to face primary challengers and they'll still have to go through the debates. The only way, and I hate to say this, but the only way that a great vice president is almost a lock to win their next election is if the president dies in office and they succeed that president. And then they run with the power of incumbency, and in all likelihood, no one in their party will challenge them in primaries.
Why do you and so many liberals have to make it so difficult? The glass half empty. Here's an example to counter what you just said.
Why do you have to insist on it being half full when it is half empty?
Because you have to be optimistic and you have to know when to be pessimistic.
Here's I'm not being pessimistic.
To what you just said.
I am being completely historically pragmatic. Now, you may not like the historical pragmatism, but it is what it is. Okay, Johnny.
How do you explain Al Gore? Al Gore won the popular vote, but he quote unquote lost because of skullduggery by Republicans.
Well, and again, that's...
I mean, you can make an excuse for anything
no,
you
no,
want.
No, 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 no.
Why do we have to shoot ourselves in the foot? Do the job of the Republicans. Let's be more proactive and be more positive and downplay these negatives. That's all I'm saying.
I don't see it as a negative. I see it as someone else can do the job better, longer, with more contact and understanding of the country that now exists, which I don't think a 78-year-old can really do, honest to God. Okay, I got to let you go, but I appreciate your call, Johnny.
He's the only one.
All right, thank you very much. Who's up next? Is it Scott? Scott, no? Yes? Scott, good. Scott, you're
can
on
you
the
hear
air.
Me?
Yes, how you doing?
Oh, fine, yeah. Well, I did not watch the debates. Instead, I watched how other people reacted to them.
Fair enough.
I was watching on Daily Kos during the debates and looking at the comments.
And?
Yeah. Oh, first night, it seemed Elizabeth Warren scored well.
She had a great night.
Yeah. Second night, Kamala Harris scored well over Joe Biden.
She had a great night.
Bernie Sanders did not do so great.
Not so great. Grouchy old man, get off my lawn.
Yes, there was a dispute over Julian Castro.
Yeah, he had a great night.
Yeah, I guess Beto O'Rourke didn't do too great, but there's controversy over that.
Well, you know, going to Beto, my particular opinion is I don't think he's a particularly good candidate. He may be a great guy. He might be a terrific senator. He might even make a decent president. But I have to tell you that except for the fact that he was running against Ted Cruz, I was not extremely impressed.
Oh?
I mean, I probably would have, as they say, voted for a yellow dog over Ted Cruz, you know, when they talk about
okay.
the yellow dog Democrats. I don't think he's a bad guy, but I think that he uses a lot of words to say very little. I noticed this when he was running for senator. I think he did the same thing during the debate. He uses a lot of words to say very little.
Oh.
That's my opinion of him.
Okay. Well, he certainly gave Ted Cruz a run for his money, and
he might give
John Cornyn a run for his money too, or even beat him.
He might.
Yeah.
I think that Beto and Julian, if one or both of them don't make the later debates, I think one or both of them should run against Cornyn.
Yeah.
God help us, we need to get rid of one of these Republican senators. Make the state less of a joke.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the debates and the reactions I heard to them, they didn't change my inclinations at all too much. I was inclined toward Kamala Harris because I've read her book, and on page 66, she says it's time to dismantle the war on drugs, and quite frankly, that is a negative, and I think it would take a decade of Republicans, of Democrats in power to get positive goodies.
Well, we're going to have to capture both branches of Congress. We're going to have to get the Congress and the White House, and to some extent, we're going to have to get judges.
We did win both houses in 2008, and then started going downhill.
Well, I think for all of Obama's accomplishments, and there were actually many, I think that he frittered away his best, most powerful year, which historically is the first year.
I think he frittered it away. I think the Democratic electorate concentrates too much on the presidency. They don't seem to understand the role of Congress.
Or state legislatures. Yeah, I totally agree. We have to remember that.
Who vote in every election.
We have to remember that government is local. Politics is local.
Yeah.
And president and Congress are incredibly important.
Many people seem to think the government is the president.
Well, okay.
And I think that's a serious mistake.
All right. I agree with you. I got to let you go, Scott. I forgot to do a station break last quarter hour, and I need to get a couple other callers. So I appreciate it. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can follow the goings-on of KPFT at kpft.org. You can follow me at thinkwingradio.com or on Twitter at thinkwingradio. And remember, there are many, many things you can do to learn about and help KPFT. You can go to the donate link. You can suggest shows. You can comment on shows. You know, we don't get commercials, so the metrics of how people know what you think of shows is really determined by word of mouth, which translates into emails and phone calls, and also, of course, donations. So this isn't a fundraising thing. I'm just saying. In any case, so now we have callers. The number is 713-526-5738. We do have open lines. Is Craig up next? Okay, Craig, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey,
how you doing?
Craig, Mike.
Who? Craig?
I got to see both debates Wednesday and Thursday night. And, you know, I got to see some of the highlights and some of the differences in the party. And as a six-year-old, I think the one thing that I would ask any of us in this election cycle, is to figure out what we want as a country and as a society, and what are the things that we think are most important to us.
Okay.
And how we get, what path we take, and what we do when we're on it.
I agree.
And
what kind of country do we want to be, and what kind of country do we want the world to see us as?
Yeah, what do we want to be as a country? What do we want the world to see us as and acknowledge about us?
Right.
I found a stat. I was listening to NPR, I guess it was Saturday morning, and they brought up a point. I think it was Ron Elving, one of their senior correspondents, who brought up this point. And it was this fact. Whenever they've had, the Democrats have nominated a younger candidate for president over the last 60 years, those are the years that they've won.
Hmm.
And the years he pointed to were 1960 with John F. Kennedy, 1976 with Jimmy Carter, 1992 with Bill Clinton, and 2008 with Barack Obama.
Interesting point. Now, of course, I mean, you know, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, I think, is the Mark Twain quote. So mm-hmm. I acknowledge what you're saying. Of course, there are other things like name recognition matters and you know, policy pronouncements or lies matter, and things like Willie Horton ads matter. All of that factors in. But yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And I think it kind of goes back to my point, which is, do the majority of voters who will be under 65, under 60, will the majority of voters feel like guys in their mid to late 70s understand not only their needs, but how to accomplish their needs? Remember, Barack Obama is the first president who used a laptop in the Oval Office. Can you believe that?
Yep.
2009. It took until 2009 for a president to use a laptop in the Oval Office. And that is one of the ways that you exemplify generational difference.
And people almost forget, and I don't know if people who do know about the 1960 election between Kennedy and Nixon, the fact of that election is that was the first election where you had two candidates that were born in the 20th century.
Hmm. Interesting. Interesting. You know, there's, as a sidebar, there's also an interesting point that people that watched the debates thought that Kennedy won, and people that listened on the radio thought Nixon won. That's just kind of an interesting little sidebar. Okay, I'm going to let you go because I've got some other callers, but I do appreciate your calling. I hope you call again.
I will. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Take care. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is how you follow what we're doing. One great way to help us here is to spread the word. If there are shows you like, this one, another one, Brad Blog, Partisan, not Partisan, what's Egberto's show? Politics Done Right. There are a lot of shows, music shows, too. Tell your friends. Ask them to sample the station. Okay, next up. And by the way, the phone number, we have open line, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Charles, you're on the air. How you doing today?
Yeah, hi, Mike.
What are you thinking?
Oh, well, do you know how long, how old Elizabeth Warren is?
I think she's close around 60, more or less. I'm not sure. I'm guessing. I could look it up.
Okay. So definitely in her early 60s?
No, I wouldn't say definitely. I'd say she's around 60, more or less. I mean, hell,
okay.
Let me look it up on my phone.
Okay.
Let's see here. Elizabeth Warren. Hold on a second. My phone has to go through its thing. Okay, Elizabeth Warren. Will it just give me a birth date or something? Looking. No, that's United States Senator. I'm really kind of looking for Wikipedia. Born 1949. So actually, she's 70.
Okay.
So, yeah, not a spring chicken.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
so that's eye-opening.
Up there herself.
I'm sorry, say again, please?
I said she's almost getting up there herself if she's approaching 70.
Well, she wouldn't be the oldest president ever elected on Election Day, but I think it's a fair point. However, I think she's... It may well be a bias. I think that she is still more connected. And, you know, 5 or 8 years make a difference in this generation. That's like a third of a generation.
Yeah.
I think she's a little bit more connected to the world. Kamala Harris, I believe, is younger. I think she's like in her mid-50s.
Yeah.
54,
I was going to say, I kind of like Elizabeth Warren among the front runners.
Yeah.
Because she's for true change. Substantial change, and she just, she seems to make a lot of common sense. She seems to have a whole lot of common sense, I'm not.
Did you feel like the debates?
That I want her to be the Democratic nominee, even her to be the Democratic nominee. I kind of feel like. The best thing to happen is if a dark horse became the nominee.
With 24 candidates, you don't think we've already got dark horses? Would you not say Pete Buttigieg is a dark horse?
But none of them have broken out from the pack yet.
I don't know. We'll have to see what the post-debate polling looks like. So you didn't like anybody from the debates. Is that what you're saying? It not only didn't change your mind, it closed your mind in a sense?
Well, I kind of liked Kamala Harris. I thought she was kind of nice.
Who are your favorite three?
Huh?
Who are your favorite three? Give me your top three.
Oh, gosh. I would say...
Hard question.
Well, I'm still going to include Elizabeth Warren... Kamala Harris, and I definitely don't like Joe Biden.
But that's not what I'm asking. Yeah, the third one is hard.
Huh?
The third one is hard.
Yeah, the third one's hard. It really is. There's so many
I like Julian Castro. I think I might put him in a top three. I think he did really, really well. I think he surprised.
I didn't think of him. He looks kind of good, Castro.
Yeah, he would be great on a stage with Trump. I mean, Trump is like 6'2". He's like 5'6". That would be a contrast. I still think he could blow Trump away. I think he's got a lot of fire and a lot of good ideas, but I think the visual would be challenging. And he would have to make sure, unlike Hillary, that Trump here. Now, I'm going to give some campaign advice here. When it comes to debating Trump, if it's your turn to talk and he's hovering, glowering somewhere in the background, turn around and ask him to take his seat. There's no way he should be hovering over a candidate's shoulder when it's their turn to talk. Hillary was too polite to do that. She knew he was there. But I think that you need to turn around and just tell him, literally, take his place.
Well,
so that's my thing.
Bill Clinton turned his back on the working class people, and that's what lost the election for Hillary.
Well, Bill Clinton, and again, this is voters' fault. Bill Clinton lost his Democratic majority in 94 and had to work with a Republican Congress then for 6 years. Whose fault is that? That's not Clinton's fault. So to get anything done, you've got a Republican Congress. Do the best you can. Politics is the art of the possible. So when people elect a Democratic president, don't stay home 2 years later. Finish the job. Not Clinton's fault. Not Obama's fault. Voters' fault.
Yeah.
Okay.
When Obama became a lame duck, that was kind of a bad thing. He wasn't able to do anything.
Everybody becomes a lame duck eventually, but he was a lame duck with a Republican Congress. Charles, I'm going to have to let you go. I got to take the next call. Okay, thank you so much, Charles. We have open lines, and we still have some time. The number is 713-526-5738. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT, 90.1 FM. KPFT.org is how you learn about the station and shows, and I am at thinkwingradio.com and Twitter at thinkwingradio. You see how creative I am? Okay, Mike, you're on the air. How are you doing?
Oh, could be worse.
fair to middling is what I use.
Yeah, I could be on my fifth bout of bladder cancer instead of just my fourth bout.
Oh, man. But you've lived long enough to have four, so,
yeah.
I mean, that's something.
The
Not that I'm making light of it.
Take me out, but... 19 years ago, and it didn't, so...
Well, I wish you well. So what's on your mind?
Listen, I've called basically to talk about the thing that I called a couple of times to talk about is semantics, but I had to weigh in on this whole thing about Obama's years in there.
Okay.
I think everybody's kind of misstepped a few things. You did on one thing saying he wasted his first year. His first year was wasted when George Bush decided that he couldn't do anything about the economy when it was melting down. That wasted the first year of whoever got elected. And when John McCain made everybody aware that he didn't understand the economy, that just made it inevitable that Barack Obama was going to get the election and his first year would be wasted trying to recover that economy.
Well,
luckily, he was able to do so. And Lord help us, had he not been able to do the things that he did to save the auto industry and everything.
Well, I think, are you still there, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that when I said he wasted his first year, I did couch that with the comment that he actually accomplished many things. When you see a list, it's kind of stunning. But like on his big policy, like health care.
Well, that's where he wasted it.
That is where he, and what he did was, I think his first year, he underutilized the president's bully pulpit.
And
he kind of wanted
Nancy Pelosi.
Well, he wanted
power hungry.
You know, anyone that the Republicans
lived through any, 8 years of George W.
Mike,
Bush.
Anyone the Republicans badmouth, we should embrace. They hate Nancy Pelosi. You know why they hate Nancy Pelosi? Because she's effective.
Well, if he'd have reined her in a little bit on that health care issue and gotten a few Republicans in on the deal, then they could have gone down saying it was a bipartisan deal. But as it went, he lost everything in the 2010 because it wasn't bipartisan.
Mitch McConnell insisted.
Froze out the Republicans. She got tired of trying to negotiate with them.
Mitch.
And it was time for her to call in Barack and say, you need to sit a few of them down and read them the riot act.
This goes to the bully pulpit thing. He spent the summer waiting to let Congress kind of sort things out, and the Republicans basically did a job on him. But, you know, you have to remember, Mitch McConnell, right after the election, said, my objective is to make Obama a one-term president.
And that was the other thing.
So bipartisan, hold on. So bipartisanship has not been an option. It hasn't really been much of an option since Newt Gingrich. This has been the Republican Party since about 1994. So I don't think that I think that in his first 2 years, when he had a Democratic majority in the House and the Senate, that was the time to push. And he did get things done, but sometimes he frittered away his power.
And then when he got them done, he didn't explain them. And that's what happened to the health care thing. He didn't explain that it wasn't supposed to stop everything from ever getting more expensive. It was to slow the rate of the increase, which it did. It slowed the rate of the increase of health care in America. And nobody ever came out and explained that and took credit for it.
I mostly agree. And, Mike, I'm going to have to let you go because I've got two more calls.
About the semantics, man.
Go ahead.
If the Democrats don't come out and say, hey, look, we got to drop the big-ass socialists and put the little-ass socialists out there, because if everybody wants us to be anti-socialists, then we just get rid of all the schools, we get rid of all the police, we get rid of all the fire departments.
We have to, Democrats,
get rid of every aspect of government, because everything we do along those lines is socialist.
Yes, Democrats have to remind people that the socialism they hate, in fact, is the socialism they love.
Yeah, it was.
We have to remind them. Mike, I got to let you go. I've only got a few minutes.
Communism.
Mike, I got to let you go. I've only got a few minutes and two more callers, but I thank you very much for your call. Some good points. Okay, next up is Chris. Chris, you're here. How
you
doing?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I've been listening, and I'm old enough to remember the Kennedy-Nixon debates and everything since then. And you said something that kind of bothered me a little bit, and it goes to why I think a lot of people don't understand why Donald Trump has been so successful. And that is when you said that Democrats, after they get someone elected, they go home
as voters.
Remember how many Democrat presidents we had that had a majority in Congress the first 2 years they were elected, but you know, they controlled both houses and they didn't get a lot of things done. It wasn't because the voters went home because their job was done. It's because of the insidership and the way that people are nominated in election. It basically goes down to election reform, which is the biggest thing that we need.
Well, we need election reform. We need political money reform. We need redistricting reform.
Until that changes, nothing is going to happen because Congress. Washington, D.C.,
but the turnouts
landscape there is just a den.
But the turnouts say it. You get 50, 60, 63% at most turnout for a presidential election. You get like 30, 35% voter turnout for a so-called off-year congressional election.
That's true.
So that means that the voters that get in the president they want then let somebody else get in the legislature they want. So, yes, the voters stayed home. They didn't support their Democratic president during his second congressional term. So
there were 2 years that were that were kind of frittered away there, and you go back, well, the same thing happened with Jimmy Carter, the same thing happened with everybody.
Democrats by disposition, I think tend to want to be open-minded and inclusive and fair, and Republicans just don't give an S. They just don't.
I think less so these days, and this is why Donald Trump has been so successful, because he challenged what every working man in this country and woman hates about politics, and that is the role of insiders in the political machine to control the destiny of the laws in our country. And it's not necessarily what's good for, I knew Ron Paul, and I asked Ron Paul one day about tax reform, and Ron Paul said, I don't care whether it's flat tax or national sales tax. He said tax reform will never happen because this is where congressmen get their power. They get their power in building loopholes for large corporations, political donors from the tax code. And if we take that power away from Congress, they're going to fight. They're not going to allow that to happen.
That's
why Donald Trump has been so successful, because he challenges that insider rule in Washington that so many people are discouraged from even voting because of.
Well, I think that what Ron Paul says, as you cite him, is something I would not disagree with. But Ron Paul, being a libertarian, to borrow a phrase, would be very happy to make the government small enough that you could strangle it in a bathtub. That's basically Ron Paul. Okay, I got to let you go. I got one more caller I want to get to, but I thank you for calling. Okay, you're on the air, and I'm going to ask you to spell your name. I can't quite get it. How do you spell your name?
My name?
Yeah, how do you spell that?
My first name is Sasha, and then my second one is, my last name is Quintanilla, so you can just say Quintanilla if that's easier.
Ah, or Sasha. But that's an interesting name. Is that Spanish, or is that Native American?
It's Spanish.
Does it translate into something? I'm interested in names.
Huh?
I'm interested in names. You're going to have to turn off the radio, I'm afraid. It's going to confuse you.
Oh, okay.
My first name is Sasha.
my bad. I can't. I'm sorry. I have my sister with me, and she's listening to me on the radio, and I can't.
She's
going
to have to walk out of the room or something. Okay, do the best you can, but pay no attention to that person behind the curtain. Okay? Tell me what you're calling about.
Well, to be honest, I actually really don't know what we're talking about. I was just calling for an internship here. I am so sorry. I didn't know I called it a bad time.
It's not a bad time. It's just not what we're talking about. You can call the main number. I'll give you the main number. You got something to write it down? 713-526-4000. You got the show call-in line. But don't let that discourage you, because now that I've given you the main number to call and leave a message about an internship, tell me about what's on your mind in terms of politics or social issues or something that bugged you on the way to or from work. Just, you got 2 or 3 minutes here. Take them. Go with it.
Okay. Well, I guess for political grounds, with the whole thing about Donald Trump and I guess Beto, it's more he can run, and I get that because, he's going for Democrats, and there's a difference between him and Donald Trump. But going with that, it's like basically as much as you can go for Democrats, as much as people can vote, at the end of the day, more than likely, the Republicans are more likely to win because that's just how it is.
Let me ask you a question, and excuse me for asking. May I ask how old you are?
I am.
You sound young.
I am 18.
Okay, so this is going to be the first election you can vote in.
Yes, it's going to be the first election I can vote in.
What matters to you as an 18-year-old? What are you not hearing that you want candidates to be addressing? Because this is where we get into generational perception differences. And you've got a minute, which is a long time in radio, so just go with it.
Okay. Basically, what I feel like isn't being really heard enough is more of a, like, just people in general, as like, doesn't matter if you're like an immigrant, if you're American, if you're native, if you're, it's just basically about people in general. You're just basically hearing about, you know, not being an immigrant, being white. But what about like other people, like, you know, Native Americans, if you're like, your sexuality, all that, just being human in general. And I feel like a lot of people aren't really talking about that, especially like both candidates. They're mainly just talking about the most two key points, which is being an immigrant and being white.
So you're talking about ethnic and racial and, well, I guess ethnic and racial equality and equality under the law.
Yes,
so that's number
basically.
One.
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Now, are you in college or are you in high school?
I am in both, actually. I am a dual credit student.
Okay. So as, I guess, a freshman in college, what matter? And I'm going to give you 15 seconds that I really shouldn't. As a freshman in college, what is mattering to you economically, educationally? What's top of mind among you and your friends right now in college?
Me and my friends, what we basically talk about is more of, like, I guess, funds and different, like, scholarships. Like, economically wise, we don't really, like, talk about it a lot because of, we all have different, like, preferences. But if it basically off to that, it just be, like, you know, college funds, scholarships, and, like, what the government can offer us.
Okay. I have to wrap up now. But I'm going to ask you, your mission is people your age need to vote, and you need to understand what you're voting for. It's a mission. Because who is elected now is going to have a dramatic effect on you during and after college. I got to go. I'll be back next week. Thank you so much. It was a great phone call. I'll talk to you guys later. Go to my website, thinkwingradio.com. See what my show is entirely about. Take care.
Have you mixed your pain meds, your sleep meds, your allergy meds? Call the Poison Helpline. Has your child eaten a tube of toothpaste, a chip of paint, a wild mushroom? Call the Poison Helpline. Have you been bitten by a spider, a snake, an insect? Call the Poison Helpline. Poisonings can happen at the home, on the job, or in the great outdoors. Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. 1-800-222-1222. Save the number, save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Has your child swallowed your medicine, your laundry detergent, your nail polish remover? Call the Poison Helpline. Have you inhaled paint thinner, glue, pesticides? Call the Poison Helpline. Have a question about a dose, a fume, something your kid just drank? Call the Poison Helpline. Poisonings can happen at the home, on the job, or in the great outdoors. Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. 1-800-222-1222. Save the number, save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
If you decided to donate your birthday to KPFT this year, thank you. If your special day hasn't yet arrived, consider donating your birthday to KPFT. Here's how it works. Facebook sends you a prompt before your birthday asking if you'd like to donate your birthday to a nonprofit. Select KPFT as your organization of choice. Then add a personalized message so that your friends know how much KPFT means to you. On your birthday, they'll receive a Facebook notification asking them to make a donation in your honor to KPFT. Thanks again for supporting 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace.